You are listening to KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend, and this is Book Lovers Cafe. Book Lovers Cafe is a program of reviews and interviews with a local perspective, and I'm your host, Chris Wilson, from the Port Townsend Library. We're located in Uptown Port Townsend, right on Lawrence Street. Today, we will be talking to visiting poet Elizabeth Austin. She is currently our Washington State Poet Laureate for 2014 through 2016, and I'm really excited to have her visiting with us today.
How the End Begins. You ask what I think, and all the sparrows abandon the tree. You ask how I feel. The ivy burns up the side of the house. You ask if I love you, and each line erases itself from the map. Shh. Isn't the shiver, the swing, our bodies thrill and flicker? Isn't that enough?
You are listening to Elizabeth Austin. She is our Washington State Poet Laureate, and that poem, which was called How the End Begins, I think that's an important thing to know that title, is from her debut collection, Every Dress a Decision, written and published in 2011. Well, welcome today, Elizabeth. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for inviting me, Chris. I'm glad to be here.
Well, first of all, the exciting thing is that you're our Poet Laureate now, and I'd like you to talk about that position and what you'd like to accomplish in the years that you're the Poet Laureate.
Sure. So I'm following the lead of my predecessor, Kathleen Flanagan, and I'm going to all 39 counties. What's different about what I'm doing is my focus is really adults. So everywhere I go, I am offering generative writing workshops for adults. And the idea here is to give people an opportunity to do close reading of a few poems together, and then to use one of those poems as a launching point for writing their own poem. So it's meant to be interactive, hands-on, experiential. And then I often will do readings wherever I go. I'm visiting book groups, partly to encourage folks who maybe read really challenging fiction and nonfiction to try reading books of poems as well.
Mm-hmm. We have a book group at the Port Townsend Library. It's also called Book Lovers Cafe. And so once a year, we do choose a book of poetry. Pretty, you know, Mary Oliver's selected works and Billy Collins, but they're available in kits so that other book groups can check them out. I just had to talk about that.
That's great.
Well, here we are in Port Townsend, and I like to think of it lately as Poetry Town. One of the reasons, of course, is Copper Canyon Press is located here. We have monthly readings at the Northwind Arts Center. We have poetry programs, and we have study groups and poetry writing groups that meet. And so, and it's also the home of many known and unknown poets, as you know. I have to mention Bob and Kathy Francis. Bob and Kathy have a short show here where they read the poem of the month, and they also started a poetry box of free poetry. And what they do is every month they put in their poem that they choose for the month, and then people can just stop by on their walk.
Oh, I love that.
And pick it up. It's kind of like a little take on the free library box.
That's fabulous.
So that's why. I feel that there's been a revival in poetry here in Port Townsend, and I was wondering if you thought that it was spreading across the state and across the country. Are you seeing signs of an emergence of new interest in poetry? Was it on the upswing or not?
Well, you know, I don't have any statistics to back this up. And when I travel around the state, I know that I'm finding groups that are interested in talking to me. So, I'm seeing a skewed group of the population. But I do think that there is a much greater audience for interest in poetry than the numbers of book sales, for example, would tell us. That I think that there is enormous interest in poetry of all kinds. And I see that in the number of performance poetry venues, the way young people are involved in slam poetry, in various kinds of poetry activity online. I think that poetry often flies under the radar, but the truth is that everywhere I've gone in the state, I'm finding there are people who are on a mostly a purely volunteer basis making a place for poetry in their community, whether that's a reading series that they run or a small journal that they publish. You know, I think you mentioned the little free libraries. Those are everywhere. And I think that those are an interesting example of the way good books, literature, but poetry especially, is often passed hand to hand. And that's why I love this monthly poem that the couple you just mentioned are putting out, because so often we want someone to curate our reading lives for us. Most people, I find, don't know where to start with contemporary poetry. And so having someone who can say, try this, read this, is very helpful. And that's also part of what I'm doing. Whenever I read anywhere around the state, I'm not reading just my own poems. I'm also reading the work of other poets to try to give people a sense of kind of the range of contemporary poetry and how there is so much poetry that is truly relevant to our lives.
Well, I have to admit that when I first heard of you was on our NPR radio station from Seattle, KUOW, and your wonderful talks about poetry with Marcy Silman. Are you still doing those poetry shows?
I am. I've cut back a little bit. I do them just once a month. So the second Wednesday of every month, just before 1 o'clock, you can hear those on KUOW. They're also all available online. If you go to KUOW's website and search for poetry or my name, those should come up. So I've had to cut back a little bit, but I still do those because I want to be that voice who's putting poetry in people's paths so that as the news unspools over the course of the day, you're also hearing another perspective on the world, another use of language to reflect our experience of what it is to be alive.
Well, you select the poems and read them aloud, and you're giving a platform for new poets or some of your favorite poetry to be heard. But then the conversation with Marcy is sort of models what people can do on their own with a group of their friends.
It does. Although I just want to say that most of the time I'm bringing the poet into the studio so that you, I introduce the poem, but then you hear it in the voice of the poet. That's part of what I want to offer is that chance to hear the poet reading their own work aloud.
So that is also really important. Maybe because you just have the feeling then, you have the emotion. I want to say that as I was reading your poetry from your book, there was very strong emotions in it. And there was a quote that I'd like to just read aloud and have you comment on it. And this is a quote from a poet, Denise Levertov. And she says, "Writing is a form of prayer." How would you react to that?
I would say absolutely. Poetry has been the form of prayer for me ever since I left the church of my childhood, which was Catholicism. So my meditative practice is reading and writing poetry. And my experience of processing the spiritual questions that are pressing is through poetry. And part of the reason why that's valuable to me is that I go to the page with questions, not with answers. I'm following my pen, learning as I go. And I really try to cultivate ways of writing that are going to access aspects of my psyche that are maybe sort of below the surface, not the same part of my brain that I use to navigate the grocery store, but the parts of my psyche that are more mysterious, more fluid, and to bring that part of me to whatever it is I'm giving my attention to through the poem.
Here's another quote about writing, and it's from John Edgar Wideman. He's not a poet, but he says, "Good writing is always about things that are important to you, things that are scary to you, and things that eat you up." So I'd like you to talk about that and the ability for adults to use poetry to help them work through problems or emotions in their lives.
Well, that quote reminds me of my favorite definition of poetry right now, which comes from the writer, the poet Marie Howe. She says, "Poetry is a cup of language to hold what can't be said." A cup of language to hold what can't be said. And what I love about that is that it holds this idea that there are things that are beyond our ability to say, but we still need to reach after them with language. And so I agree with that quote that you just read, that often what I'm doing with a poem or what I'm encouraging others to do when I teach writing workshops is to use the process of writing a poem to hold the things that confound us, the things that trouble us, and to try to shape something through language about them, and to know that it's the process of shaping the poem, of creating that bowl, that will lead us to a different perspective, a deeper understanding. Part of how that happens is that poems aren't linear. They move image by image. And an image, by its very nature, holds a multiplicity of meanings and resonances. And so all of our associations with the words themselves and the music of the words becomes part of how the poem moves and part of how it holds the mystery that is at the center of it.
Mm-hmm. We learn poetry when we're in school, and we practice writing poetry when we're in school, and then it falls away. We think, oh, we don't understand it, we couldn't possibly be a poet. But you're showing us by reading poetry, you don't have to understand what the poet necessarily is feeling, but take your own feelings from it. The interpretation of individuals is just as important when you're reading a poet.
Well, one of the things I try to do when I teach these workshops is to find a balance with what you just said, because two things occur to me with that. One is that part of what I'm trying to model is a kind of close reading where we look deeply at what has the poet actually said, so that we're not applying something to the poem that isn't there, but we're starting with what are these words actually, and then bringing our own understanding of those words, our emotional history with the subject, apparent subject matter of the poem, and finding a place between the two where we are seeing the poem through the lens of our own experience. And so it's true that each of us will encounter a slightly different poem, mm-hmm. but many times the back and forth in that workshop is someone will say, oh, the poem is this or that. And I'll say, well, where in the poem are you seeing that? So that we keep coming back to the poem, because often what's happening is the poet is taking somewhere we wouldn't go on our own, showing us something that we wouldn't see without that poem. And the art of close reading is about letting the poet take us there. And mm-hmm. and for me, that's part of the delight of reading poetry and reading poetry deeply.
I'd like to talk about this idea of close reading. Would you take a phrase or a line or two to really think about outside the body of the entire poem? Or explain more about what close reading is.
What I mean by that is that when we enter a poem, we don't know what the world of this poem is. We don't know where it's going to take us. And often the poem withholds a lot of information, maybe altogether, maybe till much later in the poem. So as we work our way through the poem, we are building a sense of what is this poem apparently about? What is the world of this poem? Who's speaking? And we begin to make hypotheses about that. But what we have to keep doing is, if the poem gives us something that tells us, oh, no, this isn't actually a person speaking, this is an animal speaking, then I might have to go back to the beginning and revisit how I was viewing what came before. Mm-hmm. That's what I mean by close reading, that we're letting the poem lead us more deeply into itself.
Let's talk a little bit about your early history. I read that you went away on a walkabout to South America, actually in the mountains. Were you in Ecuador, Peru, and what happened there?
Well, I went partly because my heart was broken, and like many people, the answer to that seemed to be to get away. But I also had reached a turning point in my professional life. I had been an actor my teens and 20s and had kind of reached the end of that road, and really needed to hit the reset button on my life. And the truth is that most of what I was doing there, aside from attempting and failing to learn Spanish, was really cultivating a tolerance for the kind of spacious receptivity the apparently doing nothing that lets the deep inner life flourish. I had been a very busy, focused person all my life until then. And those 6 months of not having a job, not having keys to anything, not being responsible to anyone was in many ways really scary. But it was the way I came into contact with my own interiority. And that is the pathway that led me to understanding that what I really am is a poet, which was a ridiculous thing to say at the time. But it felt true. And the maybe 17 years or so since then has been about making that true by daily writing practice, by trying and failing as a poet, by reading my work, by studying.
This seems to be a theme. I'm very jealous of your ability to do this. There's a poem that you read aloud often in performance, The Girl Who Goes Alone. And so I'd like you to talk about that and the theme of overcoming fear and being out in the wild alone, not with a man, not with a group of people. I did it for a few days in Northern Ontario when I was 18, and it was tough. It was tough in a canoe by myself. So I know a little bit, but not 6 months traveling by myself.
Well, and let me just say that I often hear from men when I read that poem, which is about backpacking alone, they'll say, well, we get scared too. And part of the poem, part of the point that that poem is trying to wrestle with is that women just get a different message from early on about our capacity to take risk and our capacity to be responsible for ourselves physically, mentally, emotionally. And I think what makes doing things alone as a woman that much harder, aside from the same risks that a man would take, is all this noise in our heads that has been spoken to us and then internalized. That poem, The Girl Who Goes Alone, initially started as an essay about a 3-day solo backpacking trip that I did in the middle of Ecuador, where I not only was on the trail by myself, but the park guards had told me when I registered and went into the national park that there was no one else in that sector of the park. So I was more alone than I had ever been in my life. It was beautiful. I had fabulous weather. But my brain was so freaked out. My internal voices were so hysterical, really, that I didn't enjoy that trip. And at the end of it, I just thought, how sad that I wasn't able to be there. And eventually, what started out as an essay became a poem and became located in the Pacific Northwest. But really, the question I was trying to answer with that poem was, if it's so hard, well, first of all, why is it so hard? And then why do I do it? That was really what drove me through the poem is, why do it if it's so hard?
Right. Why do we seek that wilderness and that challenge and wanting to be out there and doing it on our own?
Mm-hmm.
Hurry up, ladies. Do it soon because it becomes more and more difficult. I'd also like to talk a little bit about more than a thread that goes through your collection, Every Dress a Decision. And that is that the book is dedicated to your brother, Michael Hobbs. So can you talk about the importance of those poems in the book?
Sure. My decision to commit myself to poetry as my main creative focus was followed almost immediately, meaning like 5 weeks later, by my brother Michael's very sudden, very odd death. He was living in the Czech Republic. He had gone there as an economist. He was only 37. We'll never know exactly how he died because he had been dead too long before his body was found. An autopsy wasn't conclusive. So the strangeness of his death, that sudden loss, became something I needed to write about, to write through. And so those poems are, I think of them as the narrative spine of the book. There's a series of poems called What is Known. Each has that same title. And I think of them almost like vertebra on a spine. They're each holding a part of the structure of this book, and then different other themes navigate around that spine. But as anyone who's had a loss knows, grief isn't linear, and we think we're done with it, and then it comes back from some other direction. And so I wanted those poems to intrude on the other themes, the way life happens, that we're all navigating multiple things, but those core losses will keep reasserting themselves, and we keep having to revisit them with who we are now. And that's what I was hoping to recreate in this book, which I hope, if people read it, I hope they'll read it consecutively, front to back, because it's very much built as a book as a whole.
Mm-hmm. That's how I read it, consecutively. And I loved discovering the different themes in the book and becoming aware of what you were struggling with as I read through the poems, which, you know, isn't apparent right away. So I really recommend this book to all of you. We're talking to Elizabeth Austin, poet, teacher, advocate for poetry, and this year's and next year's Washington State Poet Laureate. Her book is called Every Dress a Decision, and it is available at your library and at your local bookstores. It's published by Blue Begonia Press. You're listening to KPDZ 91.9 FM here in Port Townsend, your local radio station, and this is Book Lovers Cafe. Elizabeth, I'd love you to read some more poetry. Can you choose something for us and tell us about it?
Sure. I'd like to read a newer poem. I have a chapbook, which is a small collection of poetry that I just put together. I'm looking for a publisher for it. This is a poem from that chapbook. And I want to share it because we're sitting here in the KPDZ studios, and I also work at KUOW in Seattle. And this poem first began to arrive while I was standing working in the newsroom at KUOW. The newscast was being broadcast into the studio, as it always is. And as the newscaster was announcing something, I also got a text from my teenage niece who lives in Southern California. And the collision between what the newscaster was announcing and the contents of her text generated this poem. I actually left the newsroom and went to the ladies' room and started jotting down notes for it. Mm-hmm. And the title is the entire contents of her text, which is, "I Had My First Kiss." My niece's text arrives as the newscaster announces a bomb landing just outside Jerusalem. "Was it what you hoped for?" I text back, delight battling instant anxiety. "Don't get pregnant." The voice on the radio intones a preliminary body count. She's eaten from the tree of knowledge, and all I see is the garden gate closing behind her. Her holy city bombed, the harvest burnt, every olive tree uprooted. "Write down what happened and how you feel," I text to a 14-year-old who reads little more than status updates. "What am I thinking?" "Celebration in the refugee camps," the voice reports. "But already, jets overhead, childhood scrambled by a mother bent on drinking away her own damaged youth. Maybe my niece's childhood's been over for a long time. Or maybe I'm the one who's stuck in the old story. The one where any taste of sweetness is paid for with years of bitter herbs. Look twice before you cross that border, I'm begging, while she's tasting snowflakes on her tongue. Learn to tell your own story, I want to write. To her, to me. Put what's delicious in your own words so you can keep it, no matter what comes next.
This is another theme that we find in your poetry, and that is a strong theme of women and feminism, but also the comforts of being a woman. There's a poem that you wrote in this book called Sarah, and it's on page 36. I want our audience to know that there's love and warmth available to them. So let's read this one.
Sure, I'd be happy to. I made a complicated decision not to have children of my own, and that's one of the threads that's through this book, and this poem is very much part of that thread. Sarah, my nose on top of your head, I inhale your version of the universal baby scent, two parts vanilla, one part wet earth. You rub your blanket across your cheek, suckle the bottle. We've escaped the throng of strange faces, too loud voices. One of us had a meltdown, overwhelmed by everything we don't yet have words for. Beyond that door, it's your mother's birthday. She won't need us to explain what keeps us from the party. Wrapped in the nursery's familiar embrace, your body at ease against mine, we rock. The comforted. The comforter.
Women without children can still be important models and caretakers for all of the children that are around them and their extended families. I want to mention another poem on that theme, which is Dramatis Personae. That's on page 60, and I think it follows well of listening to you read the poem, Sarah, about the baby. There are many really strong women and women that maybe wouldn't have had the time to give to the world unless they were without children of their own.
Dramatis Personae. My great, my grand, my mother, you know what the dramatis personae demands. To be the lead, you have to breed. At best, a walk-on part, a cameo for the maiden or childless aunt, bereft by misfortune, romantical, or malfunction, anatomical. You played the only parts conceivable. What use, you fret, will the stars, the suitors, the hoped-for husband, have for me, uncastable anomaly? Let these pages stand in for progeny. Each line, dear great, dear grand, dear mother mine, the next link in the chain our labor made.
Well, we can all hold hands with Emily Dickinson and enjoy this poetry. And I hope that during National Poetry Month and every month, you take a moment to read a poem and share a poem with a friend. Today we're talking to Elizabeth Austin, and it's been lovely to have you here with us. Please come again. I know you'll visit Port Townsend again. Be on our radio station and in our community.
Thank you so much, Chris. It's been a huge pleasure.
You've been listening to Book Lovers Cafe, a program for everyone who hasn't read everything. Today we talk to poet Elizabeth Austin. Next time, join me again to talk more about books and authors. I'd like to thank all the volunteers at KPTZ for making local radio possible, especially Nora Petridge and Larry Stein, the editor of Book Lovers Cafe. Thank you again.